Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, actor and executive producer Mark Juan Smith is here to chat about his hugely popular Epix series, Godfather of Harlem. Lee Foster, executive director of Atlanta's famed Rialto Center for the Arts, is also here to chat about this weekend's benefit gala. In closing out the show are Oscar nominees Leslie Odom Jr., Andra Day, and Lakeith Stansfield. I'll revisit my conversations with them in celebration of tomorrow night's Academy Awards, airing at 8 p.m. on ABC. I'll also be playing classic sounds from the late great Luther Vandross, who would have turned 70 years old this week. But first, here's an important message from the High Museum of Art.
Support for WCOK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting an exhibition of the life and legacy of Georgia native David Driscoll now through May 9th, 2021. The exhibition showcases Driscoll's painting and printmaking practices and 60 works of art spanning 7 decades of his career as an artist, curator, and scholar. Time tickets are required. More information is available at high.org.
This is Lisa Arendelle, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
My first segment features Lee Foster, executive director of Georgia State's Rialto Center for the Arts. The historic performing arts venue is hosting a virtual benefit gala tonight beginning at 6:30 p.m. and will feature performances from 2020 along with interviews and tributes from artists, fans, and friends. I caught up with Lee this week to chat about the event and the future of the Rialto post-COVID-19.
Lee Foster, welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm just fabulous, Ray. How are you today?
I am so excited to have you on the show. You know, we have been working with the Rialto Center for a number of years now, decades now, I want to say. I don't want to date myself, but decades now. And like you, so many organizations around the country were affected by COVID-19. This time last year, you guys were in the midst of an amazing season. I think it at that point, it had been kicked off by Atlanta's very own Gladys Knight, correct?
Wasn't actually kicked off. That was kind of in the middle. But yes, we had an incredible night with her, you know, and Midnight Train to Georgia. So we had so much fun. But the last performer of the season was Dee Dee Bridgewater, you know, the incredible NEA jazz master. And I am telling you, when she sang Lover Man, I had tears running down my cheeks. Was she amazing? And that was our very last show on March 7th of 2020.
Wow. And like I said, so many of us around that time, we were uncertain as to what was going on. We all thought that maybe we'd be gone for maybe 2 weeks, a month tops. And here we are a year later. We're still dealing with this. How has the Rialto Center dealt with this entire pandemic?
Well, you know, we certainly weren't alone in this effort. There were so many theaters that had to, what we call, shutter. And about a month into it, this is what we did. We basically said to ourselves, you know, even though we can't use our stage, we can use the theater with small groups, with masks, distancing, to be an aid to our community and to the Atlanta artists. Because the Atlanta artists, poor people, were, you know, also not performing, also not getting gigs, also not, you know, being paid for all of their incredible services. And maybe even more, most importantly, they weren't having an opportunity to be creative in the community. So we wanted to provide sort of that platform for, I don't know, joy and solace for Atlanta artists, and also for our community to provide hope. Because you remember how depressed we all were at first. We didn't know how long this would last. And so we came up with this whole plan to do streaming. We worked with GSU TV because we're, of course, part of Georgia State University. And we, at the end of it, this is what, 13 months into it, almost 14 months into it, we have done 59 live streams. 59, yes. It was sort of just like, we kept doing it, and then artists would call and say, we can do it too. And then we were like, great. And we weren't charging and they weren't charging, but I mean, we paid for our staff to do it, but we were living our mission, right? We were providing this service, and we did a lot of the Feed Your Senses, which is the monthly lunchtime lunch and learn program. We called it the mental health break. So we had amazing artists during that period, which were, by the way, featuring in our gala this, you know, Saturday. And we had Kenny Banks Jr. We had Rhonda Thomas. We had, there are just so many people, I can't even tell you all of them. We had Joe Alterman. We had Joe Grandston, and he played with Kenny Banks Sr. And we had all, just like all these people were pouring out. Even Russell Gunn and the Royal Crunk Jazz Orchestra called me and said, hey, we promised the Blue Note we'd be there, but we can't. Would you help us and stream us? So we did it. We distance them all on stage. And of course the horn blowers were sort of in the middle, the furthest apart. And then everyone else wore masks. And we did the whole Royal Crunk Jazz Orchestra to the Blue Note. But you know, the upside of all this that we did, 59 live streams, was, do you know that we had almost 60,000 people that logged into all of our different programs? So we are just so thrilled that people took advantage, right? Because this is a new thing for us. We've never done anything like that before.
Wow. Just, I mean, 59 is just unbelievable, but I think it says a lot to the resilience of who we are as a city, and especially for the artists, because it was this, we cannot lose, we have to come together, we have to work together. And so we're so excited that you guys were able to provide that. And like you mentioned, that leads us into this weekend's amazing event, which is a benefit gala that is going to, you know, benefit you guys and really kind of give you sort of a push to help you kind of keep going. Because I know that over this time, it has been difficult to keep the doors open. It has been difficult to pay staff. And we know that the world is starting to open up a little bit. So let's talk about this amazing gala.
Well, it's called Live at the Rialto, the Gala, and it is, I think it's a homage to the fact we all want to be live, but we are live there, but of course our audience is still virtual, and we're hoping people will, you know, touch base, log in. We're going to do some amazing things. You know, it is actually our 105th anniversary of the Rialto, and the Rialto's had actually three incarnations. The most recent being, of course, when Georgia State University bought it in like the 90s and then turned it into this world-class facility. But it has celebrations of the 100 years. It has historical segments. It has discussions. It has some great small clips of some amazing artists that I mentioned a little while ago and more. You'll also see some of the artists talking about what the Rialto meant to them. And one of the sequences I just love with all my heart is Kathleen Bertrand. I'm sure you probably know her. She came on and did this amazing show for Women's History Month called Sisters in Song. So she comes on and talks about what it meant to her being a native Atlantan, being on the stage and following the greats, you know, that her brothers brought her to the Rialto to see Pharoah Sanders and McCoy Tyner and people like that. And of course, her hero is Diane Reeves. So we interview her, and then actually Diane Reeves has performed at the Rialto a few times. So we have this amazing sequence of Diane Reeves actually singing her intro at the Rialto in the 2000s, I can't remember exactly when it was, 17, I think. And but it's all chromatic. So I'm like, I'm not getting it in my ear, but anyway, it's amazing. But the thing that really moved me was just sort of her, she just felt it deeply. The fact that it was part of Atlanta history, then it was part of her history, and that she could come to this place, perform on the stage, and look who she followed. Look at these greats that she followed. You know, Kenny Banks Jr. said the same thing. He said that when he was young, he was in the theater, and he was watching Ramsey Lewis. And he said, you know, I was watching Ramsey Lewis, and he said, and then I had to leave quickly because I had an idea. I had to go get that down on piano. So those are some of the great stories that you'll hear during this gala, because we wanted to really give people a sense of who we are, where we fit, and this great heart that the Rialto has for our community that is both Georgia State University and Atlanta.
Now, this is all open to the public, but there is a portion of the gala that is an upgrade. So let's talk about that as well.
Yes, anyone can come in from 6:30 on. 6:30 is like the pre-show. You're, you know, putting your fuzzy shoes on and maybe grabbing something to drink. And then 7 o'clock, we're going to start. And that's when there'll be some there's no live performances except for at 8 o'clock. Is the upgraded program. And we have the remarkable Tom Scott, who's been around for a million years. He's the two-time Grammy winning composer / saxophonist. He played on albums including Frank Sinatra. And of course he won a Grammy for a album with, I think it was Joni Mitchell, but he's been nominated 13 times. So he's like this amazing guy. So he's gonna be performing with our professional band, the Kevin Bales Trio, with Kevin Bales, Robert Boone, and Kevin Smith. And that goes live at 8 o'clock, and everyone, if you want to come, that is ticketed. But anyway, we hope everyone will come for the whole night, because I think it'll be a great celebration.
And real quickly, there are plans to open the Rialto this fall, correct? A little birdie kind of told me that.
Well, that's what this event is about, is helping us to get from, you know, right now where we are to that time. And provided that COVID is under control, which I've had my two shots, and hopefully many other people will. Yes, our plan is we hope to open the Rialto series in the fall, and that'll be from the fall till probably April or May. And I can't tell you much about who's coming, but I can tell you it is our hope and plan to provide the great entertainment that everyone's become, you know, accustomed to and plan for. And the other thing is, you know, we have all those youth programs. We have that incredible Rialto Jazz for Kids program. We're hoping to bring that back. And as you know, that's been operating under Dr. Gordon Vernick in our School of Music department for years. And even in the video, we interview Morgan Guerin, who you probably wouldn't know, except he was a graduate of the Rialto Jazz for Kids, and he plays with Esperanza Spalding and was just featured at the Grammy. So our little Pop Warner jazz team can go on and do great things. So we're really excited.
Lee Foster, Executive Director of the Rialto Center for the Arts at Georgia State. Thank you so very much for being my guest today. And we so look forward to this amazing live benefit gala. You can get more information about that at WCLK.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ray. I'm really grateful for this opportunity to talk to you.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Life Lux Jazz Experience, November 4th through the 8th, 2021, in Los Cabos, Mexico. Performers include Eric Roberson, Mesa, Mike Phillips, Hiroshima, and is hosted by Mark Curry. There will also be health and wellness activities and a sunset cruise. Information is available at lifeluxjazz.com.
Come on. Yeah, well now every time I close my eyes,
she creep.
Try it for me four times.
Creep.
I like that. Once more for me four times.
Creep.
Four more.
Creep.
Wait a minute. 19-
Hi.
Cassie Davis here. You're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius. Take it away, Ray!
You guys been trying to kill me for months. I'm here.
Bumpy Johnson's gonna be dead by the end of the day.
The new world is here, my brothers. And I gotta fight for his mind. He should die like a dog! Y'all know how the saying goes. Harlem is mine.
Open up my window again, just in case.
You just heard a snippet from the trailer of the popular series Godfather of Harlem. The Epics drama is back for a second season and features Oscar-winning actor Forrest Whitaker as iconic crime boss Bumpy Johnson. The show is set in the 1960s and follows Bumpy's return from 10 years in prison to find the neighborhood he once ruled in shambles. With the streets controlled by the Italian mob, Bumpy must take on the Genovese crime family to regain control. I caught up with the executive producer of the series, Marquand Smith, during a recent AFCA roundtable where he revealed that Forrest Whitaker was originally brought on as a series producer and not the lead actor.
I want to say, Marquand, this is a beautiful series. I mean, the look of it is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, your nod to Romare Bearden, I was like, this is like a painting in motion. But my question is regarding Forrest Whitaker as the lead. I mean, he's such a nice person. I've got a chance to meet him and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's playing such a very hard character. Was he your first choice or did you have him in mind when you were creating this show that you wanted Forrest? Because he also brings such a vast history of acting to this character.
Well, to answer your question, when I was first, when I first started thinking about the show, you know, Margaret was, I wish Margaret was still here because she would be right here answering that question with me. She was thinking about Charles Dutton, Michael Clark Duncan, all these, and this is over 18 years ago, because she was always thinking who can portray her father. Now, fast forward, Forrest didn't only commit to play Bumpy, he committed it to produce it with me. So scripts had to be developed. And that's where Chris Brancato came in, who's the creator and the showrunner of the show. And we sat down and Chris must have wrote about close to 24 scripts before Forrest said, you know what? I really see this character. And as an actor myself, it's not about just taking a role. You have to understand the role. You have to research the role because there's nothing out there about Bumpy. I was in the Schomburg Museum going through microfilm and old articles, Jet Magazine articles and old Harlem, Amsterdam news articles just to find out about Bumpy. So Forrest loved the idea and the concept, but he really wanted to see how it would unfold on paper and if those words would jump out to him as an actor. And it did. And I said, you know, I believe that, you know, I myself and Forrest, we were both method actors and I just felt like he can really get into it and make Bumpy come to life.
Watch Godfather of Harlem on Sundays at 9 p.m. on Epics.
Check it out. I can't fool myself. I don't want nobody else to ever love me. You are my shining star, my guiding light, my love fantasy. There's not a minute, hour, day, or night that I don't love you.
Hi, this is Iyanla Van Zandt, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
We're just hours away from Hollywood's biggest night, and in celebration of this year's Academy Awards, I wanted to go back and revisit three of my one-on-one interviews with Oscar nominees Leslie Odom Jr., Andra Day, and Lakeith Stansfield. These first-time nominees were equally as excited to chat with me about their projects, including One Night in Miami, Judas and the Black Messiah, and The United States vs. Billie Holiday. Here's a portion of my conversation with Lakeith Stansfield, who is up for Best Supporting Actor for his role as FBI informant Bill O'Neill.
I gotta ask, you know, this movie, you know, you're playing the story of a real person, someone who actually lived. And when I thought about it, I was looking at the contrast of your career so far. You went from Jimmy Lee Jackson to William O'Neill. So how did you prepare to play someone that we hate in this film?
Well, I hated him too when I first learned about him, which was through this script, actually, in detail. I saw him briefly on the Eyes on the Prize the segment that they had when I originally watched the documentary, which was years ago when I was a teenager. And I was just like, yeah, whatever. I don't even want to talk about him. And saw him again pop up in this. But I didn't think I'd be playing him. When I first heard the script, I thought I'd be playing Chairman Fred Hampton. So I got the script and I was like, thank you, Shaka. This is amazing. I'm going to start getting into it right now. I'm going to start eating it, blah, blah, blah. He's like, wait, no. We want you to play William O'Neill. And I was like, what? Are you serious? You want me to play this guy? Why do I have to play this? My desire to be a part of a story that would uplift the legacy of Chairman Fred Hampton and my desire to challenge myself would ultimately bring me to take on the role.
All of me.
That was Grammy-nominated singer Andra Day performing the Billie Holiday classic All of Me for her film The United States vs. Billie Holiday. The Golden Globe winner is up for Best Actress for her portrayal of the jazz icon and talked exclusively to me in January about the role of a lifetime.
Your transformation into Billie Holiday was, I mean, spectacular. From the moment I heard you speak the very first time as Billie, it sent chills through my body. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I was like, she's got this. At what moment or at what time, I guess, during shooting, did you know that you had fully embodied her spirit?
I don't know. When I felt her presence, when I felt that commingling of spirits, you know what I mean? Where I was in it and I was a spectator, but the spectator was me and the person was me. But I never felt confident. That's the difference. I had a peace about doing it. I knew I felt like I was supposed to do it. I had prayed about just the wisdom of whether I should get into it or not. But I never felt, there was never a moment every single day I went to set with knots in my stomach thinking, today's the day I'm going to be terrible. And today's the day Lee realizes he should have never hired me. But there were moments, I think particularly, I carried her with me in my life, you know, so her DNA made it onto my record. You know, I am her when I'm at home and with family. I'm changing my behaviors. I'm changing my appearance. You know, we cut my hair off. I lost a bunch of weight. I'm smoking cigarettes. I'm drinking alcohol. I'm just different in my behavior. Cussing a lot more because she had a PhD in it. So, so I think primarily was when my mom or my family, you know, especially my mom, because she would just like rudely refuse to accept. Like, she's so excited about the movie. But during the process, you know, she'd be like, well, what's wrong with you? I'm like, what do you mean, lady? You know, I'm Billie right now, you know. So I think moments like that were when I was like, oh, it would be moments when I would think I was being me. And then a family member or a friend would be like, eat, yikes, you're doing it again. You know what I mean? And that's, I think, when I realized, like, wow, she's sitting in that space, you know. And it was Lee and it was Tasha Smith, my acting coach, Tom Jones, and Susan Laurie Park's great script that really allowed me to get to that place. And then getting to set and seeing the costumes and all of that stuff come together, it was very weird. It wasn't a moment of like, oh, wow, I look so different. It was more of a moment like, oh, wow, there I am. You know what I mean? And that's what it felt like seeing myself, but I was Billie. You know what I mean? And that was weird. It's very weird to navigate.
You just heard Hamilton star Leslie Odom Jr. performing the Sam Cooke classic, A Change Is Gonna Come. He portrays the music legend and Regina King's film adaptation of the stage play One Night in Miami. When I talked to Leslie back in January, he revealed why he initially turned down the role and wasn't sure if he could deliver.
Yeah, it's very embarrassing, but it's true, because I did not feel, I did not have the same instinct that you had. I didn't have the same instinct that Regina had. And I only tell the truth about it because to be honest, I go out and pursue most of the opportunities, right, that I desire to be part of. And most of them I don't get. To be honest, you know, most of the things that I go after, I do not get. So every now and again, I luck my way into one of them. But sometimes things find their way to you. And sometimes somebody sees something in you that you didn't see in yourself. And that was my experience with Regina. She saw a Sam in me that I didn't see in myself. It took me a while to catch the vision.
Listen, listen, while the storm in your heart is raging, listen.
In addition to his Best Supporting Actor nomination, Leslie Odom's tune, Speak Now, is also up for an Oscar in the Best Original Song category.
I don't remember whose idea that was, but I know that it was talked about early on that I would contribute in this way. They actually asked me to write four songs. Regina wanted to choose, you know, so she wanted some selection, and Speak Now was the one she chose. I wrote it with my brother, Sam Ashworth, who I've written quite a bit with. I love writing with Sam. We have a shorthand, and we went back to Blown in the Wind, to that song that Sam heard that got under his skin. He loved it enough that he recorded his own version of it and sang it many times in concert, that Bob Dylan tune. So we went back to that, and we just, Sam and I were just asking ourselves some questions. Think about, you know, Sam Cooke wrote A Change Is Gonna Come. And we were asking ourselves, has the change come? And if it has come, for whom has it come? And thinking about, are those answers still blowing in the wind? You know, we're just asking ourselves those questions and asking ourselves what is really important. We had to set ourselves free from being like in a competitive space with those other brilliant songs, in the same way that the four of us in that hotel room were able to occupy our individual spaces, the way that Sam and Malcolm and Cassius and Jim are able to occupy their own spaces. And it's not about competition, it's about sharing. It's about holding up your greatness right alongside whatever greatness I may possess. So we wanted our song to be that, to be an offering that hopefully could be held up alongside these other great offerings.
All right, Leslie Odom Jr., thank you so much. Congratulations, and continue to have a great 2021.
Ray, thanks so much.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Lee Foster, Marquand Smith, and Oscar nominees Lakeith Stansfield, Andra Day, and Leslie Odom Jr. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University.